Good afternoon. This is 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. This is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, September 16th, 2020. Ahead this afternoon, free legal assistance in Arkansas for some residents who have been affected by substance abuse. The Beyond Opioids program is designed to offer help for such tasks as getting a driver's license to get back to work following struggles with substance abuse. That report in our second half hour. More than 1,000 Arkansans have died from COVID-19 now. Yesterday, the Arkansas Department of Health added 17 deaths to the grim tally and more than 670 new cases from around the state. The state is also tracking a new category, probable COVID-19 deaths. These include deaths that list COVID-19 as a contributing factor, but did not have lab test confirmation, or deaths of people who had a positive antigen test but not a PCR test backup confirmation. As of yesterday, 139 probable COVID-19 tests have been tallied in Arkansas. We'll have more from the first weekly briefing from Governor Asa Hutchinson that took place yesterday later on today's show. Northwest Arkansas hospitals are reporting there are 35 patients in COVID-19 units in Benton and Washington counties. That's an increase of 8 since Saturday. The Washington County Election Commission will host several early voting locations this fall. Among those open during the entirety of the early voting period, from October 19th through November 2nd, the County Courthouse in Fayetteville, Arvest Ballpark, the Elkins Community Center, Diamond Dance Studio on Weddington in Fayetteville, Medical Arts Pharmacy, the Prairie Grove Fire Station, the Springdale Civic Center, and the West Fork Community Center. Other locations will have limited days or hours, including Bud Walton Arena on the University of Arkansas campus. The locations were determined and announced by the Election Commission yesterday. Last night, the Fayetteville City Council agenda included an item that would have prohibited landlords from collecting late fees for non-payment of rent during the pandemic. After researching the matter, City Attorney Kit Williams said the move would likely violate state law, so the council decided to table the measure indefinitely. But Council Member Teresa Turk did suggest adopting a resolution instead. While it would have no regulatory powers, it would state that landlords should halt charging late fees. And just yesterday on our show, before an interview with Charles Robinson, we identified him as the interim provost at the University of Arkansas. We were correct. But now, today, he is the permanent provost and chancellor for academic and student affairs at the University of Arkansas, effective immediately. This is Ozarks at Large. Community Clinic is opening its 8th school-based health center in Pea Ridge. The clinic had its soft opening Monday, and Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has more.
When Pea Ridge High School students returned to the classroom this semester, they entered into a brand new building. Among the building's new amenities is a community health clinic. Community Clinic CEO Judd Semmingson says the plan to provide health care services at the school has been in the works for some time.
Discussions of this clinic were going back several years, actually. And so as the high school was being constructed, we were part of those discussions and knew that, you know, we wanted it to be a very conjoined environment. So we're integrated in with the school nurse. We're integrated in with the health professions programs. And so the environment is set up to be very conducive, not only for healthcare, but also for learning in the school.
Pea Ridge Clinic and Community Coordinator Alex Jackson says the new facility shares a space with the school nurse, which will help give students a sense of familiarity.
One of the best things for me is that, well, students don't know how to make a doctor's appointment, and they don't know like real world things about that. And so having this here, I think, is really going to help get them prepared to be able to go to appointments, to be able to make appointments, to be able to advocate for themselves and for their education.
In terms of education, Jackson says she's been spending time getting to know Pea Ridge's Career and Technical Education, or CTE, programs and figuring out ways to include student learning with the new clinic.
One example is like our marketing team. And so whenever we're thinking about having a staff t-shirt, is there a student that can help design that? Whenever we're thinking about the medical professions classes, like can they, you know, kind of look at what we're doing and get some experience with that? And same thing for all of our different classes where students are learning technical skills and career-based skills, integrating them into this experience.
Community Clinic CEO Judd Semmingson says access is a cornerstone of community health centers, and school-based clinics provide students with access to primary care services.
Could be for well child checks, it could be for sports physicals, but it could be also for sick visits. And we have scenarios set up where parents are able to give consent for the student to be seen without them present, without the parents present. And so that allows us to be able to see that child, to get them back to class, to not have to have the parents either miss work or pull other kids, other family members out of class if they're trying to get to a physician or a provider appointment. So the big premise of that is again, making sure that we're taking that healthcare to the students.
This year, services also include COVID-19 screenings.
We've seen allergies kick up. We've seen, and we certainly are moving into the beginnings of the peripheral side of our cold and flu seasons. Anymore, unfortunately, you can't exclude COVID from any of those possible symptoms, even though it could be something else. And so all of our sites throughout our organization, including our school-based health centers, have the capability to test for COVID, certainly if that is a suspicion.
The clinic is also open to the community, and assistance is available for those without insurance.
We accept all insurances and those without insurance. And so for those without insurance, we do have programs available to help reduce the cost. So as we look at community health centers, again, our mission is access. And so we want to make sure that people know that they can access healthcare, including the school-based health centers, regardless of their ability to pay. And we want to make sure that we get that, we get them do the best we can to make sure that everybody knows that.
The new clinic, which is located on the west side of Pea Ridge High School, is open from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday. You can call 479-488-3003 to make an appointment. Walk-ins are welcome. More information is available at pridgek12.com/community-clinic. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Arkansas's deaths from COVID-19 number more than 1,000 now. At yesterday's press briefing, the first since the governor shifted from daily to weekly briefings, the Arkansas Department of Health's latest numbers officially added 17 virus deaths to the state's total, meaning 1,003 Arkansans have now died from the disease. And the state is now tracking probable coronavirus deaths, a calculation of 139 as of yesterday that stretches back throughout the pandemic. Dr. Michael Sima, the State Department of Health's chief epidemiologist, says the new category includes two main kinds of cases.
You can be labeled as a probable case and probable death if you have a positive antigen test alone, and then you expire. And also, you can be labeled as a probable death if someone passes away and on their death certificate, their underlying cause of death or a significant contributing cause of death is COVID-19, even in the absence of an antigen test or a PCR test.
Governor Asa Hutchinson says he doesn't think the number of deaths in Arkansas is on the rise significantly over the past few weeks, but says he is frustrated that the state is having to report deaths in daily reports now that should have been added in months past. This new probable deaths category in Arkansas is based on CDC guidelines for tracking virus deaths. The state also reports 676 new cases during the most recent testing period for more than 5,800 test results. And Governor Hutchinson says the ability for the state to conduct more antigen tests over the next 2 months is getting a boost. He says the Department of Health has received 12,000 antigen tests.
That will allow us to have at least 2 months of antigen testing guaranteed through the Department of Health. And this is great news to greatly expand our testing capacity in Arkansas, as well as continuing to increase our PCR testing.
Ivy Pfeffer, Deputy Commissioner at the Arkansas Department of Education, says 3+ weeks into the school year, there have been 39 modifications in learning at schools around the state, from small tweaks to larger shifts.
22 of those modifications are still ongoing. So since the start of the school year, We do have some that have been added. Eight have been added this week. Now, to understand, though, we have to remember that each of these modifications are unique to the school district and unique to the circumstances around the need for the modification. So one example might be in a district like Pocahontas that has shifted their high school to virtual for 2 days. And that is to allow the district time to do some cleaning and notification to all of the affected students. Another example of recent modifications is in the Pulaski County School District, where there was just one classroom of second grade students that are going to be utilizing virtual instruction for the next 2 weeks.
In the most recent round of tests, Washington County reported 91 new cases, Pulaski County 71, Benton County 48, and Sebastian County 47 new cases. Dr. Jose Romero, Arkansas's Secretary of Health, says many of the 91 new cases in Washington County are connected to the University of Arkansas. Governor Hutchinson says nearly a month into the K-12 school year, he's been pleased with the ability to keep a handle on coronavirus cases in public schools. But he says keeping case numbers down on some college campuses can be more difficult.
You've got a lot of other activity that happens outside of the educational environment. And you see that in very reckless ways sometimes. And I think with the actions of the universities, they've cracked down on that. They've utilized their ability to help guide behavior in a more positive way off campus. And that, I think you're starting to see some results of that. So if you look at what we thought was going to happen when we started and where we are now, I think you have to say it's been a very successful start to school, both at the higher education level as well as K-12. But there's no guarantee as to what's going to happen the next couple of months. That's what's challenging about this pandemic is it is unpredictable. All we know is that we have certain things under our control, and that is our behavior. And we keep focusing on that because that does make a difference.
Governor Asa Hutchinson speaking at a press briefing yesterday in Little Rock. The governor is in the middle of his second and constitutionally mandated last term as governor. According to a new poll from Talk Business and Politics and Hendricks College, the governor continues to get high approval numbers. The most recent poll surveyed voters in the state's second congressional district. That's the district that covers seven counties in the center of the state, including Pulaski County. This week, Roby Brock with Talk Business and Politics asked John Brummett, a political writer with the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, about the 70% approval rating for the governor in that district.
70% is like, wow, that's good.
That's Mike Beebe territory.
It is. It
almost.
And it's 36% strong approve and 34% somewhat approve. It's all approval in terms of his job approval rating, and it's very high, and it's very good, and it belies a lot of the sniping at him that you hear on the left and that I've engaged in. I remember sitting here 3 weeks ago saying in 3 weeks the schools will be closed. They're not.
Right.
Take that back. So Asa's doing okay.
And he's been getting it from his right flank, too.
Sure.
So,
But I think both these flanks are, in the main, not all that consequential. I think he's where Beebe was as sort of the center-right, center-left, pragmatic governing. I will say this about his 70%. It's 36% strongly support.
Mm-hmm.
What's your words? Approve or support? I forget.
It was approved.
Approved. And it's 34%. Somewhat approved.
Which is lukewarm.
Here's what I would bet. If you asked every one of those people who said, yeah, somewhat support, to complete their thought, I bet a great plurality at least would say, somewhat support, yeah, compared to Trump. I think that's what you're doing. Because I think he benefits by the fact that he is day-to-day responsive and responsible. And has taken some tough decisions, not all of them right, not all of them that I have embraced or that others have, or that nobody's embraced all of them, but he has led, and he's led in a modulated, seemingly responsible way. So I think he benefits in part by his by being compared to the utter mess at the federal level.
Yeah, and a word that I use to kind of describe how Asa Hutchinson has led during this pandemic too is he has not been bombastic, which is what you have seen at the national level.
Never.
And even in some state governors have been a little bit more pushy with the press and the public.
That's not his way.
This, and it's not.
I've often joked about the fact that he seems to have sort of a short circuit. You ask him something and he's waiting and you think, are you there? He makes sure that he has thought through the question and the answer. He's always been that way. And some disdain or have critiqued or ridiculed his daily briefing style as spin and grin or grin and spin. Because he does have a little smile and he's always trying to be positive. But that's actually his way. And that's actually the kind of leadership that you want, unless you really need to say, folks, we're all going to die if you don't do this right now. You need to try to balance the competing interests. And he has pretty much done so. So that's good for him, 70. And I think this means just he's got to still be a factor in Arkansas politics. He's got 2 years left. I'm already writing about it, the race to succeed him, because it fascinates me and it should fascinate a lot of us. And it's worrisome. But there's a Senate seat. Bozeman is running again, I guess. But I don't know. I don't think Asa is done in electoral politics. I'm not sure exactly where or how, but I
he's don't. A lawyer. There could be a Supreme Court seat open.
He didn't make Trump's list.
Oh, I'm talking about at the Arkansas Supreme
Court. Oh, that.
There would be no... Would that be stepping down to be a Supreme Court justice?
To this Supreme Court?
You might want to bite your tongue on that one.
Okay. So. Well, he would be a welcome addition over there.
There you go.
There you go.
Well, let's segue to our numbers on the presidential race. Right. Again, as I have said often, it's a congressional district. Look at this. It's not a statewide
This
number.
Is a snapshot of eight counties in Central Arkansas.
It's seven counties in Central Arkansas, but it is...
Oh, it's seven?
Yeah, it's seven counties now.
Okay.
Yale County splintered
That's
off
right.
a while back.
10 years ago.
Yeah, I'm just kind of trying to make you feel good there.
Time flies, yeah.
Anyhow, this is a congressional district that Hillary Clinton lost by almost 11 points 4 years ago, and now we have Biden with a 4-point lead. What do you think has happened in that 4 years that has made people turn their political thinking?
Roby, if I understand your fine poll at all, the answer is in the poll. The answer is there. It's women. Mm-hmm. It's that women generally are outraged by the infantile, irresponsible, belligerent behavior they see in their president. They don't like the way he behaves. And this doesn't mean just liberal women or moderate women. I believe that by some of the slight uptick in numbers for Biden compared to Hillary in the outlying very conservative Republican counties, that there are culturally conservative women who are otherwise with their husbands on we need a gun in the house and I don't believe in abortion. But they've just had it with what they think they see in the character or absence thereof in this president. So, and I think they look at Joe Biden and they think, okay, he's a good guy. That was the whole point of the Democratic Convention. This whole election, your poll is not just here.
This is
the national election right now. Suburban women, suburban mothers who voted, who couldn't abide Hillary, settled grudgingly on Trump, largely abandoned the Republicans in the midterms. Now what are they going to do? The Democratic Convention was all about, hey, we know you're out there. He's a bad guy. Look what a good guy Joe is. The Republican Convention is all about, we know you're out there. We know you don't like us. You don't like Trump. How would you feel about a race riot on your cul-de-sac in your suburbs? That's what's going on.
Yeah.
And it's reflected in your poll. And so that's where the difference is. You know, in the second district, Pulaski County cast 50 to 52% of the vote. And they always vote handsomely favor the Democrat. But it gets wiped out by more pronounced majorities in the immediate suburbs, Saline, Faulkner, and White. And that's different in your poll, Biden-Trump, as opposed to Clinton-Trump, because the women, well, women vote. It's an inverse in your poll. Tell me if I'm right about this. Men favor Trump by a wide margin in the second. Women favor Biden by that margin.
Correct.
It is. If you want a gender gap, here is the classic quintessential full gender gap.
And there's about a 4-point gap between more women voting than men voting traditionally.
I don't want to go on too much about this, but this is the thing. There was a highly acclaimed piece, highly acclaimed by me and many others, in the Washington Post earlier this year called Miranda's something. Washington Post feature on a woman in Georgia named Miranda's Confession, Miranda's Dilemma, something like that. I recommended it to my LifeQuest class. They all went, wow, this is it. She's a culturally conservative Georgia woman who loves her husband, and they get along fine, and her husband works on the car, and she takes walks every day, and they have a good relationship. But she told the reporter, she just unburdened herself. You know, I can't do Trump. I did Trump before, but I can't do it. And I can't tell my kinfolks, even though she's telling them to the Washington Post, so they found out. Because it's all about the church. It's all about our shared family culture. But I'm having trouble. The reason I like that story was I think that's a microcosm of this thing that we're seeing. Now, whether it holds, here's the question. Can Republicans cause those conservatively inclined suburban women to begin to revert to form and fear liberalism more than they disparage Trump? That's where we are.
That's what we're going to find
that's
out
where
we're, on November
that's what,
3rd.
That's what we're going to find out.
Being counted after So,
John Brummett is a political writer for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, and his columns can be found at ArkansasOnline.com. He spoke with Roby Brock from our partner Talk Business and Politics. More from their conversation, including analysis about the race for the state's second congressional district seat, can be found at TalkBusiness.net.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.
This is Ozarks at Large. In 2020, sitting down at your local coffee shop has become more complicated. But what if that coffee shop were in the middle of a 300-acre forest? Ozarks at Large's Daniel Carruth explains that might be more likely than you think.
It's 7 a.m., and I'm walking up to Airship Coffee's newest location. Or rather, I'm walking up to the trailhead that leads to the Bentonville-based company's newest location.
Have you been on this area, Mark, on your bike? What's that like?
That's a dual slalom.
That's Claire Bullard, the company's sales and marketing manager and owner, Mark Bray, on his bike. They're leading me on the 1.5-mile trek through the Kohler Mountain Bike Preserve in Bentonville to the Open Air Cafe. The new concept is unlike any coffee shop in the area, resting in the middle of the recently completed 300-acre park.
So the homestead includes these two old barns that were restored, and then a view into the valley here.
The concrete building juts out from a hill and overlooks what a trail map lists as the homestead, a well-manicured forest where the trails converge past yoga platforms and two renovated barns. Bray says the cafe was planned as early as 2018 by the Peel Compton Foundation, which owns the space and manages the entire bike preserve.
Yeah, so we're standing on the porch of the cafe that overlooks the Kohler Valley. The idea here originally was to create a space that was outside of town a little bit, but nestled here in town close by, but be a place to get away.
The actual coffee bar is located in a small port at the back of the porch behind a window, and outside above the building is an uncovered seating area with a string of lights above. Bray says the shop will offer its regular coffee menu as well as beer, wine, and some food items.
You've probably had Mexican street tacos. Our take on that is Ozark Trail tacos. So we're smoking the meat. We'll have brisket, pork shoulder, chicken, that kind of thing. But really simple, but delicious food. So we want everything to be easy and simple here and not distract from the environment.
And while Bray and the team at Airship was excited by the prospect of a Kohler Preserve location early on, Claire Bullard says the pandemic has made the idea of a coffee shop in the woods even more enticing.
I really just would like it to be an accessible destination where you don't just park and leave. You know, you pull up, get a coffee and leave. You come to stay a while. And whether that's by yourself so that you can just be with the trees for a while, as crunchy as that sounds, it's true that it is beneficial. And I think that over the last 6 months, more and more people have realized that. So we are looking forward to bringing that to more people.
She says the cafe was hit hard in March when they had to scale back their operations to go only because of COVID-19. But she and Bray both believe the size and relative isolation of the new space will make it a popular and safe option for customers.
I realize, okay, so we're keeping the vehicle traffic out of this area. We're keeping the disturbance to the environment at a minimum so that we can protect the space for the wildlife. And that's when I realized, wow, how cool would it be to be immersed in the middle of that, to provide people a little place of rest and refreshment.
But along with that rest and refreshment comes some challenges, like getting supplies and people into the woods.
I have been curious. We use a local milk producer that has these like big glass jars. So I'm curious if it will be kind of, he'll see it as an obstacle or like embrace it as that 20 minutes of his day that he like got to go out in the woods. So we'll see.
Yeah. When you compare it to say owning a coffee shop or restaurant in downtown Chicago or New York City, it's like you got logistic problems there as well, right? Ours just happened to be in a peaceful environment. So we have a service road where we can bring supplies in that doesn't interfere with pedestrian traffic. So that was really the solve for that. Now, there's not a parking lot. So all of our employees during interviews with our new staff, we had to let them know, like, you'll need to be prepared to walk or ride a bike, and that's part of it.
But Bray says he's not worried about accessibility, and he believes this open-air cafe will ultimately help Airship, which opened its first location at 5th Street in Bentonville in 2018, reach even more people because it helps expand on the company's mission.
So our mission in our retail cafes is making a place where authentic community thrives. And so what we want to do is be in the space we're in as true to form.
So although we didn't plan the timing to happen like this, we're really looking forward to opening in the fall in the Ozarks after a really hard year and offering something really special that hasn't been offered ever in this area.
Bullard says there's no set date for the cafe to open yet, but they hope to have a soft opening sometime this fall. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Daniel Carruth.
This is Ozarks at Large at 91.3 KUAF. We are in the middle of September, and September is KUAF's fall fundraising month. It does seem like time is flying by, right? KUAF and NPR have kept you up to date during these strange times. It has been 6 months today since we had an outside guest in our studios. You tune in each day for the latest news and information because you know you can trust KUAF and NPR for balanced, intelligent news coverage. That's why we're asking for your help throughout September. The on-air portion of our fundraiser will begin on Monday, September 21st, but you can make an impact right now with a gift of support at KUAF.com. As of last night, Sherry Ottaviano, KUAF's membership director, told me that we had reached $30,000 of our ultimate $140,000 goal in this month. You can make a support in the pledge that you choose right now at supportkuaf.com. When you do, you're doing your part to keep the news right where you want it, when you want it, here on 91.3. And thank you.
This is Reflections in Black, and I'm your host, Raven Cook. Reflections in Black is a segment dedicated to exploring the legacy of Black Americans in the United States and around the globe. Reflections in Black also provides resources for understanding and hope for all people. All literature is protest. Richard Wright. Born to Nathan Wright and Ella Wilson on September 4, 1908, in Roxy, Mississippi, Richard Wright would become one of the most important literary voices of the 20th century. Wright's father was an illiterate sharecropper, and his mother was a schoolteacher. Finding sharecropping work unprofitable, the family moved to Memphis, where a young Richard Wright would experience abandonment as his father would leave the family, extreme poverty, and the weight of violence and racism in Jim Crow segregation. Times grew even more difficult for a young Wright as his mother became sick, and he and his brother were sent to an orphanage before having to move back to Mississippi to live with his grandparents. As the only non-religious member of the Seventh-day Adventist family, Richard Wright grew restless. So he wrote short stories, including The Voodoo of Hell's Half Acre in 1924, which was published in the Southern Register, before finally deciding to move to Chicago in 1927. While in Chicago, Richard Wright would become a part of a new wave of Black urban intellectuals, and he would join the Communist Party in 1932. Later, he would recognize the party's inconsistencies and abandon the group. In 1937, Wright moved to New York City and earned federal funding through the Works Progress Administration. In 1940, Wright published Native Son. Native Son would go on to become an American classic. Its gritty depictions of the harsh realities for Black Americans in urban areas resonated with audiences and gave new voice to a new style of writing. Wright would go on to write several other works, including Black Boy in 1945, The Outsider in 1953, Black Power in 1954, and White Man Listen in 1957. He would use the texts to discuss various issues from anti-colonialism to existentialism. In his personal life, he would marry in 1941 and have two daughters before moving to Paris, France, where he acknowledged the ability to exist as both a Black man and a writer. Richard Wright died in Paris on November 28, 1960, but his legacy lives on today. Today, we honor and celebrate the extraordinary life of a literary pioneer, the great Richard Wright.
Reflections in Black is a production of KUAF Public Radio in Fayetteville. You can hear weekly segments on Ozarks at Large, and you can find past editions of the program at KUAF.com. Just search Reflections in Black.
This is Ozarks at Large. Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday. Don't forget, if you can't always be with us on the air at noon or 7, you can spend time with us through our free podcast. We're available for free through all the major podcast distributors. You can also go to ozarksatlarge.com or ask your smart speaker to play Ozarks at Large to hear the most recent edition of our show. Going virtual appears on so many announcements these days, as in an annual event, In an Abundance of Caution, is going virtual this year. And we have some recent additions to that list. The 29th Annual Survivors Challenge 10K Walk, 5K Run, and Celebration Walk benefiting the Reynolds Cancer Support House is going virtual this year. Anyone can participate. You can run or walk anytime, anywhere between September 20th and October 20th. Now, there will be no formal award ceremony, understandably, this year, but registered participants will have a chance to win cash or other prizes. To win, you just complete your run or walk between September 20th and October 20th, then enter your official time. And I should say that official is in quotes on the press release. Enter your official time at runsignup.com, or you can post a picture of your run or walk time with a selfie to the Survivors Challenge Facebook event page. If you'd like to register, you can go to ReynoldsCancerSupportHouse.org. The 10K cost $35. The 5K virtual run or walk is $25. The virtual celebration walk, $20. The kids fun run, that's for children ages 3 to 12, is free. The swag bag and t-shirt pickup dates will be announced soon. Again, to register, ReynoldsCancerSupportHouse.org. And out of an abundance of caution, Experience Fayetteville is canceling the 2020 Lights of the Ozarks Parade. It was scheduled for late November. It will not be held this year. Now, the tradition of holiday lighting throughout the downtown square will still happen, with the City of Fayetteville Parks and Recreation staff hanging the lights. Experience Fayetteville is preparing ways to offer socially distanced programming, including plans for a virtual lighting ceremony. Part of the socially distant programming will include reducing the number of food and beverage vendors that you'll find on the square throughout the 2020 holiday season. The application, by the way, for food and beverage vendors still available at experiencefayetteville.com. That will go live on September 22nd.
KUAF is supported by the Breast Center, a MANA clinic and accredited breast center by the National Accreditation Program for Breast Centers, offers 3D mammography, risk assessment, dedicated breast MRI, ultrasound screening, and more. Details available at breastcenternwa.com.
This is Ozarks at Large. Arkansas, like most other states, is battling opioid abuse. There have been gains, but the long-term effects for individuals can affect health and wealth. Getting a job, paying rent, and other matters can be difficult after struggles with substance abuse that might have included legal difficulties. A new program in Arkansas, Beyond Opioids, Breaking Legal Barriers for Family and Recovery, is being administered by the Center for Arkansas Legal Services and Legal Aid of Arkansas, and can provide legal assistance to families who have been affected by the opioid epidemic. Last week, we talked with Julie Norman, the managing attorney in Little Rock for the Center for Legal Services, and Helen Graytill, project director for the Beyond Opioids program. Julie Norman says the $2 million grant will allow several partners to participate, from the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences to ministries to public defenders' offices to the Arkansas Department of Corrections.
If they identify one of their patients or clients where a legal solution might help them, they would refer them to us for that legal work. And so what I mean by that, so what we're seeing a lot of times for folks that are in recovery, perhaps one of the barriers to them finding a job is not having a driver's license. So we can help them obtain that driver's license. Maybe they're unable to find housing, proper housing. We can assist them with housing. Maybe they have lost a child, or that child has gone into DHS custody, the Department of Human Services. So maybe there's something that we can do to assist them in that custody case. So a lot of times a barrier to recovery means simply that, you know, this individual is so focused on this outside problem. Maybe it's, like I said, the child custody, the lack of a job, lack of food. How are they going to fix that problem and be able to focus on recovery at the same time?
I'm guessing that this can also help reduce, ideally dramatically reduce the chances of someone returning to a substance abuse problem. If you have this help and you can have some, I don't know, legal aid to address some of these problems, perhaps a return to substance abuse is far less likely. Do I have that right?
That was the idea. So our thought is that it takes every different parts of the community to sort of stabilize a family, because drug addiction drives a wedge between family members. It's a destabilizing factor. And so dealing with their legal issues or helping them navigate the civil legal system is, in fact, helpful to them, in our view. And it's scientifically proven to do that. Yes, that is absolutely the idea, to help stabilize the family by making sure they have wraparound services. in all aspects of their life, including making sure that they have safe, affordable housing, that they are their credit is restored or protected through our consumer protection program, that they have good representation in custody or legal guardianship issues, for example, and that they have access to public benefits to make sure that they have money in their pockets and food on the table.
And idealistically, isn't this a rising tide lifting all boats for Arkansans? Aren't we all better if we can help each other?
Are we all better if we can help each other? Yes. If you look at the economic impact of the opioid crisis, and if you look at the externalities of not just the number of lives lost and also the productivity, it is something that happens to us no matter how far away from it we are. And there is no way to solve or eradicate the epidemic until we all come together and help.
Julie, maybe you can explain just a little bit more about the broad services that Center for Arkansas Legal Services provides.
Sure. So for over 55 years, the Center for Arkansas Legal Services, or as we call it, CAL, has been around to advocate for low-income Arkansans. The various things that we do, whether it be family law and under that umbrella, you know, you're going to have divorces and guardianships for children, also custody issues, adoption issues, orders of protection. That's a popular, legal topic there. Under our consumer law group, what they're going to help you focus on is if you need to file for bankruptcy, if you have creditors that are harassing you, if you have old credit card debt, to help you with things like that. If your wages are being garnished, what's the best way to go about stopping that from happening? In our housing work group, right now with the eviction moratorium, our cases in that housing group are really substantial. So just keeping people in their house, landlord-tenant laws, trying to keep people in just safe, stable, affordable housing. And then finally, in our public benefits practice group, we handle cases like Social Security disability, food stamps, sealing of criminal records, veterans benefits. We also do wills and estates for people. And then we have a disaster assistance program that came into being last year at the beginning of the year in response to the 2019 Arkansas River flooding. So folks that were impacted by that disaster, we've been doing a lot of work with them, helping them out with their various legal problems.
Julie Norman is the managing attorney in Little Rock for the Center for Legal Services. Helen Gratil is project director for the Beyond Opioids program. They spoke with us last week. The program just began this month. You can find out more at arlegalservices.com or by calling 800-950-5817. Calls are answered from 9 to 11 a.m. and 1 to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday. Legal Aid's website is arlegalaid.org. Both the Center for Arkansas Legal Services and Legal Aid of Arkansas have Facebook pages with additional information.
Jazz reflects the fundamental nature of the American spirit, recognizing the importance of the individual while connecting that to the idea of cooperation. In the words of Herbie Hancock, the spirit of jazz is the spirit of openness. I'm Robert Ginsberg, and for 41 years I've been your host for Shades of Jazz here on KUAF. My gratitude goes out to you and to KUAF's commitment to presenting America's unique musical art form. Whether it's a historic recording or a brand new release, the music you connect with, the artists you relate to, will be here on KUAF, Shades of Jazz, Jazz Scoop, and our jazz station KUAF3. Help us to continue to make even more connections with your gift of support today. Go to supportkuaf.com.
This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Salisaw, Oklahoma. 91.3 KUAF is a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. You can find out what you may have missed on Ozarks at Large if you subscribe to our free daily Ozarks at Large email. We send it to you every Monday through Friday afternoon. It has a list of all the items that were on that day's show and provides links so you can go directly to them. To subscribe, just go to KUAF.com and it costs you nothing. Contributors to this Wednesday afternoon edition of Ozarks at Large included Antoinette Grajeda, Daniel Carruth, Raven Cook. Timothy Dennis produced today's Reflection in Black segment. He also produced the entirety of this Wednesday afternoon Ozarks at Large from his home studio in downtown Fayetteville. Our conversations between John Brummett from the Arkansas Democrat Gazette and Roby Brock with our partner Talk Business and Politics are part of our partnership with Talk Business and Politics. You can learn more at talkbusiness.net. Also tomorrow on Ozarks at Large from Talk Business and Politics, this week's Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report, and we'll have a new sound perimeter featuring Leah Uribe. That and much more on tomorrow's edition of our show. You can always find out more about us at ozarksatlarge.com or KUAF.com. Our show's theme is titled First Hurrah. It is written and performed by Daryl Sean. His most recent CD is titled Safe in Sound. You can also find Daryl performing live most weekday afternoons around 4 o'clock our time by going to his Facebook or Instagram pages. He also has a website, DarylSean.com. Thanks so much for being with us. Please take care of yourself. Get rest when you can. We will be back with you tomorrow, both at noon and 7 p.m. for a brand new Thursday edition of Ozarks at Large. From the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio at the Carver Center, for Public Radio in downtown Fayetteville, I'm Kyle Kellums. Talk to you again soon.